Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again. Thanks for listening in today. I thought the Literature in Britain Today survey, published on March 1st this year, is worth talking about on Just the Best Literature. In fact, I think it's so valuable that I felt it really necessary to interrupt our program on Thad Carhart's inspiring memoir, The Piano Shop on the Left Bank. Now, we will get back to that right after this program. But it's been a while since we have discussed the two main goals of the program, and I thought this would be, this survey inspired me to just remind you of what the goals of Just the Best Literature are. And the first goal is to certainly encourage people to do more reading of real books. And that means the bound, printed on paper kind of books. And also, it's kind of like to help you get away from reading on tablets or reading on other electronic devices. Now, I think electronic devices are great when traveling. I know when I'm traveling on an airplane, I love to have my iPad and I can read right off my iPad. So I don't want you to think I'm just down on electronic devices because they do serve their purpose. But there has been enough studies done that we know it is better for your brain to sit down with a real book and read that than it is to be on a device or electronic device. And that's certainly true of both young people and even older people. And since I fit in that senior class, I do less as I possibly can on electronic device and try and get paper in my hands and read that. You can write on it. That's what I like to do with my books. I write in the corners. I write as I'm reading. I have questions, and I might write a question down, you know, do more research. And so it's really a much more interactive thing than necessarily on a electronic device. And, of course, the other purpose, right along with the first goal, is we want you to learn not to just read popular fiction or magazines, but we want you to read the best literature that challenges your thinking, that expands our interests. I know this Carhart book we're reading, it's expanded my interest in piano and piano music. Also, we want to help you expand your knowledge of others. We're going to be introducing this Around the World in Book series. We introduce you to different peoples from different parts of the world. And also, I think when you read just really good literature, it expands our narrow thinking. We are all, everyone is too narrow in their thinking. And I think it also helps us to expand our worldview. Now, the second goal of the program is also to encourage people to get together with others and discuss the books that they are reading. I mean, that's a great joy. I think so many of our listeners have commented, we really love the panel discussions. We really love to hear you and Deborah Leap and Daryl Hope talk about the books. And so we just wanted to encourage that. Now, I just wanted I take two really interesting magazines, and I wanted to share some of it with you. One of the magazines is Poet and Writers. Another magazine is American Scholar. And it's interesting, there is this new trend in reading today, and I don't want to sound like I'm really picking on people, but actually I am. And so I'll just admit it right up front. I'm going to pick on people. And this was in the January-February edition of Poets and Writers. And it says, "Dear readers, you are not alone." That's the title of the article. And here's how the article goes. It says, "When you walk into a bar full of people silently on their phones, no one thinks anything of it," says Guinevere de la Mer, founder of the San Francisco-based Silent Book Club. Now, that piqued my interest right there. What is a silent book club? But then the author goes on to say, "But when you walk into a bar full of people silently reading books," now, that's an interesting image. Well, I thought it was more than an interesting image. It's kind of like a weird image. I've never gone to a bar and saw a bunch of people reading books. She said, it's also an image that's becoming more common as new literary trends gains attraction around the country, silent reading parties. Now, again, that is really interesting. Here's how it works. A group of friends and strangers meet at a bar or a private home once a month and read together. They don't read the same book. They can come and go as they please. They're not even expected to discuss what they're reading. All they do is read in a shared space together as a community. And while some show up, read, and leave without saying a word, many pass notes, laugh out loud, or share paragraphs they particularly love with one another. Now, I don't know what that reminds you of, but it reminds me of just going to the library. So I think most of you know I have a master's degree in library and information science. I did work as a librarian for several years, and that's what libraries are for. So the thing that really gets me there, to all of our listeners out there, is it's silent. No one is discussing their books. I know even when I managed the Nine Branch County Library, we would have book clubs, and we encouraged people to talk about the books. Now, she goes on to say, a lot of people end up hanging out all night, says De La Mer, whose organization helps people start their own clubs across the country and overseas. It's a community-driven movement to get people out in public and switch out their phones for a book. And so I think that's a noble goal. But I also think there's something else going on there that people aren't willing to admit. Why would you go and read a book or read different books with a group of people and not say a word to each other? To me, that there's something going on. And I just discovered this other article in the American Scholar. And this is the, this is the spring edition. So it's really just hot off the presses. But there's another article in this American Scholar on political correctness. And essentially, it's on political correctness gone awry. So why would a silent book club become so popular? I think it's so popular because people are afraid to give their opinion anymore because, well, people don't like to share other people's opinions. I mean, people today seem so sensitive about everything that you can hardly say a word without maybe offending somebody. And this is written by he's a professor, and his name is William. I don't want to slay this, but I'm probably going to do it anyway. William Derazwitz, and he went and visited this college, and he was just kind of appalled at how bad political correctness has gone. And here's what he said. This is page 31 of the article, if you ever want to look up the American Scholar. It says, I recently spent a semester at Scripps, a selective women's college in Southern California. I had one student from a Chinese-American family who informed me that the first thing she learned when she got to college was to keep quiet about her Christian faith and her non-feminist views about marriage. I had another student, a self-described strong feminist, who told me that she tends to keep quiet about everything because she never knows when she might say something that you're not supposed to. I had a third student, a junior, who wrote about a friend whom she had known since the beginning of college and who she just discovered went to church every Sunday. My student hadn't even been aware that her friend was religious. When she asked her why she had concealed this essential fact about herself, her friend replied, because I don't feel comfortable being out as a religious person here. And so people are really hiding themselves. The advantage to a book club is you get the opportunity to reveal yourself and reveal your thinking, and if there's disagreement, we should be able to disagree with each other without, offending each other. So as I also heard that the director, let me turn the page here, the director of the Writing Center, a specialist in disability studies, was informing people that they couldn't use expressions like, that's a crazy idea, because they stigmatize the mentally ill. Now, that's crazy. That is a crazy idea. I'm sorry. I heard a young woman tell me that she had been criticized by a fellow student for wearing moccasins, an act, she was informed, of cultural appropriation. I heard an adjunct instructor describe how a routine pedagogical conflict over something he had said in class had turned when the student in question claimed to have felt triggered into, his words, a bureaucratic dumpster fire. He was careful now, he added, to avoid saying anything or teaching anything that might conceivably lead to trouble. So why do you go to school? I mean, there are some classes we took when I was in college because they were kind of controversial, and they did get people to think differently. Since I listened to students, young women again, who consider themselves strong feminists, talk about how they were afraid to speak freely among their peers and how, despite its notoriety as a platform for cyberbullying, they were grateful for Yik Yak, the social media app, because it allowed them to say anonymously what they couldn't say in their own name. I didn't know about Yik Yak, but I guess that's a new app. Above all, I heard my students tell me that while they generally identified with the sentiments and norms that travel under the name of political correctness, they thought it has simply gone too far, way too far. Everybody felt oppressed, as they put it, by the PC police. Everybody, that is, except for those whom everybody else regarded as members of the PC police. So I think that is a funny article. But we encourage you at JBL, if you don't agree with what we're saying, you can write us and we'll put it on the radio. I mean, it's okay to disagree. And our society, our freedom of speech is being destroyed in this country by political correctness. So today, what we're going to do is we're going to use this British survey to talk about the importance of literature and why you should be reading it, and also why you should be discussing it with others. Now, to help me do this today, I've invited Abraham Blondeau. He is a graduate of Herbert W. Armstrong College. He is also an instructor of history at our Imperial Academy here on the campus. He's also a regular on KPCG's Trumpet Radio Live show with host Dwight Falk. So, hello, Abraham.
Hello.
Thanks for coming in today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me on.
Well, I really found Abraham, this study, and it's actually Abraham that gave me the study, and he actually recommended it. We bring it on to JBL, so I do appreciate that. But I know that this study is really a first of its kind, and when you gave this study to me, I had one of my assistants look for a similar study in the United States, and we have some, like Gallup poll and Harris poll, to discuss today. But there isn't another survey done like this. And so I thought maybe what you could do is just start out and maybe you can explain how this survey is different.
Sure. Yeah. So the survey was done by the Royal Literature Society the Royal Society of Literature. And
yes, we better get that right, because we could offend our brothers in Britain if we don't get their titles right.
Right, yeah.
And sorry, we are not politically correct here.
for the Literature Society, they have their bicentenary in 2020, so 200 years of existence. And so for that event, they're doing this big drive called Literature Matters, and they're trying to stir up more awareness about literature and see what the people think about it. And so this poll they conducted was a part of that, to try to see what the British public are thinking about and try to find strategies on how they can help people become more interested in reading. And what's different than other polls, most polls are done over the phone, you might get something in the mail, over the internet. This one was done with actual people. So they actually talked to people on an individual basis. And it was done, about 2,000 people were sampled, so that's a considerable amount.
That really sounds like a lot of work when you're talking about going in and talking to people. And I'm assuming they either visited them in their homes or they brought them into where they work.
So, right. Yeah, I think they were invited to, depending on their circumstances, where they want to take the poll. And they just asked a series of questions, and they had to respond to with answers. And of the 2,000 people, it spans different ages, income brackets, different societal classes. So you get a pretty good idea of what different segments of society think. It's not just all older people. It's not just the rich or the poor. You really get a good scope of what different people in different situations are. And what's nice is that when we read it, I think we can each relate to our own class we're a part of, our own group that we can associate with and see what we think as well. So it's just a really great poll, and I hope they keep doing more and more of them as well.
Yeah, I hope even for here at JBL, we are primarily in the States, but we know that there are people, we know people are listening in Africa, they're listening in Europe. We do have people, liking Facebook really from all over the world. We just had a professional filmmaker in England actually just sent me a message on Facebook. So that was really encouraging. So I know people are listening all over. But I really like that their hashtag, literature matters. And really, that's what we feel here on JBL. Literature matters. Now, what is literature? I guess that's the next big question. And so I found the whole thing fascinating. And essentially, they were, you can get the survey yourself. And again, the title of it is Literature in Britain Today. So if you just go on the internet and type that in, it'll come up for you. But what they did is they asked really nine basic questions in the survey. And Abe and I got together yesterday, and we thought there were four that we feel are most important and most, most interesting for our JBL listeners. But before we get into that, I thought maybe we ought to give you Britain. Let's see. Wait a second. I'm going to get this wrong. Literature in Britain Today survey. What their definition of literature is, and I would agree with this definition, and it really is out from the Oxford Dictionary. But when they were talking to their respondents, this is the definition they gave them. Literature is, and this is from the Oxford Dictionary. Literature is written works, especially those considered of superior or lasting artistic merit. Now, just that definition I know is going to scare some people. if you hear superior or artistic, there are some classes of people that say, oh man, I don't want to have anything to do with that. And so we know that even that definition will start to incense people. But that just leads us to the first of our four big questions. The first one did deal with the attitudes toward literature. And, I think that's really interesting. So what Abe did is he pulled out a few articles from Britain. And maybe you could just go ahead and start with that Guardian article and see what the response was to this. I think it's a phenomenal project. To be involved and get 2,000 people involved, and I'm assuming they took samples from all over. I don't know if it was all over the UK or was it all over the UK?
Yeah, from what I understand, it was from different regions as well, not just London or where they're based, but as many different varieties of people as possible.
So just go ahead and let's just talk about this Guardian article, and you can go ahead and inform our listeners what the Guardian had to say, and it really was just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, so a lot of British newspapers picked up on this survey, and they wrote their own stories on it. And the one from the Guardian, it's entitled "Literature Report Shows British Readers Stuck in Very White Past," and that they're referring to just the attitude and types of books people read. Their main take was that there's a lot of really encouraging signs from this survey. I think the biggest encouraging sign is that of the 2,000 people, 88% of people agree that literature should be part of everyone's education. So a huge majority think that everyone should be educated with some kind of literature. I think the most disturbing part of it was that a third, 33% of people believe that literature doesn't matter to most people. So even though people think it should be part of the education, a third think that most people don't really care about it in their day-to-day lives. It's not really in their consciousness. And I think this Guardian article brings up some good points, just how most of the literature writers mentioned in the survey, they're white. They're the old British writers from the 18th, 19th centuries, and say that there aren't enough diverse writers and that sort of thing, which is a fair point to make. Of course, this is still a limited scope. This survey is still pretty limited when you're talking about all literature. So it is just really interesting to see that of the people who were surveyed, a lot of them knew the classics, but a lot of them also talked about contemporary writers, which we'll get to a little later. But I just think it's interesting that the Guardian picked up on the one area where about 69% of the writers mentioned were males, and only about 7% of the writers mentioned were of a different race. And I think I think coincidence doesn't really say anything against writers of different countries, because there are some phenomenal writers from different countries. But it does show that I think a lot of people still haven't opened up their horizons a lot to other other areas, other authors. And there is a certain narrow-mindedness, like you talked about, where there are some great writers, but if people aren't reading the right kinds of books, they're not going to discover these amazing writers from India, Israel, Russia, all these different places.
Right. I do think that's part of it. But one of the things that concerns me about this article is right there in the title. And the feeling I get from it is the same feeling that we have here in the States, but it's in Canada, it's in most of your Western culture, that there's something very wrong with our past. You know, they says that British readers are stuck in a very white past. But I think that misses the whole history. It's the fact that there were so many, let's say, male writers, and the fact that there were so many white writers. I know feminists are going to go after me on this, but the point is, if you look at the British Empire, I know that Winston Churchill believed that the British Empire can do good, and it did do good. And what the British Empire is, they spread education, and so I mean they literally taught other people how to read and how to write and how to be educated. And you know, we have students here at our college from India that went to British schools in India, and they know for a fact that the British schools helped bring them out of a non-education or an illiterate society. And so the fact that most of literature, you know, the white males, now yes, they were in a situation where they were given opportunity to learn, you know, and there's I don't think there was ever a time when the British did not want to educate women as well, but there was more opportunity, and so they did maximize it. I mean, in your black cultures, I know in this country, when I was in school and studying poetry, we studied black poetry as well as white poetry. But some people, because of the countries and because of their government and because they were backward, they were illiterate. That's one reason why there aren't so many writers from different races. And it's not just that they were oppressed. It's, you know, they weren't just oppressed by white people, you know, and when I was in college, I took a black African history course. And the thing that was appalling was a lot of the slaves that were transported to this country, and it was by English white, but they were still horribly mistreated by their own black leaders. And so those are things that are kind of overlooked. There are some great writers from India. There are great writers from Africa. There are great writers from all countries in this world, and that's why we're trying to have this Around the World series in books to bring that exposure to people. But I think we just have to be careful. It's almost like it seems like everything today they want to twist that there's some racist comment about it. Now, I don't know if you agree with me on that, Abraham, or not, but that's just the way this article kind of smacked me that way. Here's this great survey that comes out that you can use this for a lot of different things, and it just seems like here the Guardian goes out and attacks it. You know?
No, I completely agree with you. I think they have a couple relative points, but I think the main goal of it isn't to help people understand literature. It's to be an apologist for their own past. right. to apologize that we're sorry British culture and the British Empire was so dominant, and we should give way to other cultures today. And instead of being proud of their past, and that even to this day, Shakespeare and Dickens are the two most well-known English writers, considered the greatest literature writers to this day, and their works have lasted over centuries. So I think you're exactly right there, and I would agree that when it comes to our own culture, we should not be ashamed of it. In fact, we should make sure we should preserve it and then teach our children to read those books and that sort of thing, and other cultures should read our books on Western civilization, as we should read some from theirs to get a better worldview. But we should never apologize for the works of men who are dead and those who made it such a contribution. I mean, Shakespeare, he formed the English consciousness on having an empire, some believe. And so to dismiss him, or to say that dismiss it in some kind of political stand on literature, I think is a great disservice to his memory and also to our children, so they can learn how to read and write and enjoy Shakespeare as well.
Yeah, I just feel like it is happening in this country where, you know, people are afraid to even read American history. You know, the Constitution has a bad name because it was written all by white men. But these were the men that were the deep thinkers. These were the men that were the leaders. These were the men that really wanted to strike out and do something new. And there's no doubt that America has been so different in terms of even its democracy. Now, it's not perfect, but the laws and the freedoms we have in this country really are amazing. And unfortunately, when we start apologizing for it, we're going to lose those liberties, and we should not be ashamed of them, but we should use them to help other people. And I think America has done that, you know, quite nobly and quite honorably, and I think the British Empire did too. Really, there's something really criminally wrong where, you know, we make white children in kindergarten feel like, well, they've been children of privilege and they should now take a back seat. That's just not right. I think we should make sure that every child, whether they're black, white, yellow, or brown, everyone has equal opportunity in this country. And I think we need to be teaching that and remind people that. And it really does always get down to, where does the rubber meet the road? It meets the road with every individual doing this. So if you've just tuned in, this is host Dennis Leap, and you are listening to Just the Best Literature. And today we are discussing literature in America and Britain today. So let's just go continue now. Let's go to this other article. I think this is one from the Telegraph, and Abraham gave me this article as well. And this gets into that bottom part of the survey, this big number one question: what are people's attitudes about literature? And Abe told us that 30% of people believe that literature doesn't matter to most people. Now, unfortunately, I think that's probably true. And
yeah,
and I think it's really, really sad. So go ahead and maybe you can go ahead and talk about this Telegraph article.
Sure. Yeah, this Telegraph article summarizes the finds found in the survey, and they point out that 1 in 5 people cannot name a single author of literature. So of the 2,000 people they surveyed, 20% could not name a single author of literature, of any book or newspaper, magazine of renown. They couldn't name a single author. And I think that shows a few things. I think that some people can't read or aren't reading as often, or they're not reading, don't set aside time to read. And that could be because of lots of circumstances. Some people have a harder life circumstances they have to deal with. But I think this is disturbing, especially since if the parents don't read, usually the kids don't read either. That's is a trend we do see in society. And so the fact that 20% of these 2,000 can't name a single author, probably they can name a talk show host, a radio host, or even a video game title or things like that. But just to name a single author of literature, I think, shows a pretty big detriment in their education.
Yeah, I do think it is kind of shocking when you really understand the statistics of how many people even in America and even Western society are still illiterate. You know, they can't read. There's still, you know, there's a lot of programs we had in the library profession where we tried to encourage people, you know, if they couldn't read, to learn how to read. And that's still, it's still a big problem today. And of course, in your non-Western societies, if you look at some of your third world countries, I mean, we've even had programs, I mean, from Jeremiah Jock, you know, with The Sun Also Rises. He talks about, if he didn't talk about it on the radio, I know he had an article about, you know, the man, I think, in Afghanistan that had a traveling library on a camel, and he would take books to the children out there. So it's not just, let's say, in America. It's worse in other places as well. But I do think that you know, education itself and reading is such a large part of education, and reading a variety of books is such an important part of education. And it really, when a third of the people that were, you know, in the survey say that it really doesn't matter, then that is really, truly, you know, a tragedy. And it could be, even in England, it could be as a result of the fact that the empire is gone.
Right.
You know, let's just be honest. And, you know, what's happening in American schools, you know, is I know that, well, we're not going to stress literature because it's just too tough for them. And that's a problem in education. And so I think that the survey is bringing some of those things out, you know, very, very clearly. So I just wanted to there's this survey that I did get in America. Let's see. It is the Harris Poll for America. I did think it's kind of interesting here that what they had to say about America. Now, you have to understand there hasn't been anything done in America like this that they've done in Britain, and I hope someone would just take it and, you know, maybe do it for us. But in this Harris Poll, this was done on October 7th, 2010, so it's not very new. But one thing I thought it was interesting is that the poll shows that Americans are reading, and I think that's really good. And the very first paragraph says, among those who say they read at least one book in an average year, 8 in 10 have read a fiction book in the past year. So in other words, 79% of the people in America say they've read at least one book. Now, it's not necessarily literature. In fact, it's not history. It's not anything about science or anything. It's a fiction book. But at least they are reading books. And then this Harris poll goes on to say and says, while a similar number may say they have read a nonfiction book, 78% of Americans said this in October 2010. That they've read a nonfiction book. So that's really, really quite interesting. It says, among those who read fiction, almost half, or 48%, they also read a mystery, thriller, or crime books. But it says one quarter read science fiction. So you can see where America is really more into the fiction and maybe a nonfiction book as well. But they're not so much into, let's say, science fiction. But notice it says here, 1 in 5 said they read romance novels, and that was 20%, 21% of the people that were polled. 1 in 10 have said they've read graphic novels. It says less than 1 in 10 read what they call chick lit. We all know what that is. It's not like, you know, Chick-fil-A chicken, it's chick lit. And then there's another 5% in the country that like to read Western. This is like, you know, the Westerns. This is like shoot 'em up cowboy and Indian stuff. So anyway, the thing that this brings out is that America is reading, and so I don't know how it compares. We couldn't find anything newer than this. So but at least we can say that if we're talking about America and Britain and literature, I wouldn't necessarily classify any of those categories as literature, but at least we know they're reading. Okay, so now let's go to that second question now, the most widely read books or the books that people prefer. And this is very interesting in the survey. And why don't you just go ahead? This is a question, big number two. We can just go ahead and start. And let's just go down through these categories. And I know I was surprised about Britain. I mean, here they do have people like Shakespeare, and they have people like Dickens and all that. But go ahead, Abe. What you can just go ahead and start there, and I'll just chime in with you when you go get into it there.
Sure. Yeah. So I think one of the most valuable parts of the surveys, they showed the kinds of books people are reading, and then the authors they named. And what's really interesting is this actually ties in really well with the Harris poll, is that they asked people what different kinds of books they're reading. And 51% said they've read a novel in the past 6 to 12 months. These are all things they consider literature. Novels, 51%. The next newspapers were 59%. So I wouldn't consider a newspaper literature. But
Right. I wouldn't either, no.
Yeah. But they're reading newspapers quite often. Magazines were 50%. I wouldn't consider those literature either, but newspaper magazines are really popular over there. The next highest one was an article or blog online. So a lot of internet use, reading online articles, online blogs from people. And then a cookbook was 26% said they've read a cookbook.
Yeah, I thought that was great. So the Brits are into their cooking.
Yeah, that's good for all of us to know, I think.
yeah, sometimes British food doesn't get a very, very good rap, so maybe they're trying to improve their image.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all said in love over there in England. I love England, so.
I think these are interesting. They said a biography was 23%, as well as a history book was 23%. So I think most people consider those one and the same. So almost a quarter of people have read some kind of history book. Children's book and short stories are right around 20%. And then what I think is really interesting is that poetry is down to 11%.
I know, that's discouraging.
Yeah, especially for British poetry is probably the pillar of any poetry around the world where you'll learn it and that kind of thing. So the people read so little poetry, I think, is just... shows that the trend moving, I think all these show a trend of moving towards internet-based resources. A lot of novels, like the American counterparts, romance novels, science fiction, and then a lot of news stories, which is good, but it's not literature either.
I thought the other category that was kind of interesting, it's really low, is self-help books.
Right.
And that's kind of a, I think if I, well... I would think that, and again, the Harris poll doesn't necessarily show it, but I would think self-help books would be a little bit higher in the United States. It just seems like that's kind of a more of an American kind of thing to, if you can't do something, to get out there and learn how to do something. Or if you need help, I think generally people might turn to a book. But if it is low in the United States, I think it's just because people don't read anymore.
Right.
And so... But I do think that's interesting. Now I do have the stats here, very similar from this same Harris poll from 2010, and I'll tell you the top readers. Okay, so obviously 79% of the people that were interviewed for this poll believe that fiction. The 79% read fiction. That's what they say. Now it kind of drops down. Mystery, thrillers, and crime is 48%. Science fiction, it really gets like 26%. Now, I didn't notice this before until just right now, but in terms of literature, what people consider literature, only 24% would even pick up a literature book. 21%, so romance novels are kind of down. So Americans like their mystery thrillers. Now, the graphic novels or like the picture books like we were talking about, that's 11%. Chick lit is 8%. Western's 5%. And then any other fiction are 36%. So it is really kind of interesting. Now, in terms of, let's say, the nonfiction side, biographies, 29%. Religious and spirituality, that's 26%. And that makes sense for America because America is definitely religiously motivated. 17% like political books, 16% like self-help. So it is a little higher here in America. Current affairs, 14%. True crime, 12%. Business, 10%. And then there's another category, 29%. So it almost sounds to me like the two countries are pretty close in what they where they're picking their reading. But again, what we have to be concerned about is a little disturbing is literature is low.
Right.
You know, and we'll talk a little bit here in a few minutes about, you know, why. Actually, I think we could probably go right into that. Our next big question that we have, authors people regard as writers of literature. And so that's the big question three. And so I'll let you go ahead and we'll talk about the British first, and then I'll come in and show you what they think about where America is.
Sure. Yeah, this is really interesting because it does show what people are reading when they have to name a specific author. So with 2,000 people, there's hundreds of authors they listed, but they do list the top 20 in the percentage of people who listed them. So the top writer of literature that was named was William Shakespeare. He had 11%, so that's about 210 people. So rightfully so, I think, that he was number one. Second is Charles Dickens at 9%. So another well-known name. I think this is maybe not the most surprising, but maybe the most shocking, is J.K. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter, was 7%, and she's number three.
Yeah, that surprised me as well because, I mean, I've had I was given some assignments to write about, you know, Harry Potter, and I know when that first came out, and that was how many years ago now? I mean, you're looking at 10, 15 years ago.
Close to that, yeah.
Everybody was so excited about these books because it was getting children to read. They said, oh, children don't want to read enough these books. I mean, every library promoted it. All these booksellers were promoting it. And the only one I think has really benefited from it is J.K. Rowling. You know, I think she now has as much money as the Queen or maybe even more. But the thing that disturbs me about that book as a parent and as a grandparent, if you look at those books, I mean, it maybe the first one you could call cute, and it was like, but it's all about witchcraft and it's about warlocks. And as those books have gone on, it gets darker and darker and darker. And we know in this world there is a real problem with the occult, and yet this has just promoted it, made it fashionable, made it palatable, and you know we're having all these problems. You know, with the spirit world. So it's just really shocking. And now I know J.K. Rowling is coming out with a new set of books based on that series, and they're even darker. I mean, we've seen the trailers on the movies, and we never would take our grandchildren or our children to see any of those things. And they really can be frightening and scary. And it really is, to be honest. I mean, you know, we this isn't necessarily a religious program. However, we are sponsored by Herbert W. Armstrong College, who is sponsored by the Philadelphia Church of God. There is a real evil in this world. And, you know, we have to face that. And so it's really quite shocking. But go ahead then.
Yeah, so J.K. Rowling, number three, the top fiction writer in terms of non-classics, I would say. Next was Roald Dahl, and he wrote The Big Friendly Giant. He writes children's books. Jane Austen was next, number five. And I think this is the most disturbing of all this, is the sixth best known author was Stephen King, who, of course, writes the thriller and horror books.
He's got a new one. I just saw in Drudge today that he has a new movie coming out. It's about this monstrous clowns. And to be honest, the number one author that America loves is Stephen King.
Wow.
This is according to this Harris poll. And we can talk about some more of these. We can go down the list. But it is kind of shocking. And here in the United States, we've just had this whole spate of current news about these crazy people dressing up as clowns and absolutely terrorizing neighborhoods. And so now we're going to have a movie that's going to give them even more information or give them more situations. And and I think we could predict with a pretty good accuracy that there's probably going to be murders and violence and everything else from these crazy clowns that are around running around scaring people. So let me just say, because we are going to get running pretty close to time here, let me just say that, again, Stephen King is, in terms of favorite authors in America, Stephen King is the first. Okay, the second one is James Patterson. And, of course, we know he's written, I think, more in a military kind of vein. The third most favorite is John Grisham. We know he wrote all the lawyer and the legal things. Rounding out them is Nora Roberts. Also, J.D. Robb at number four. Tom Clancy at number five. And he wrote the military thrillers. The next one is Dean Koontz at number six. And he's followed by the queen of romance, they call her Danielle Steele, at number seven. And then there's Dan Brown, who's next, and he wrote, all about the secret societies and things like that. Tied in ninth position are J.K. Rowling. So she's ninth in America. That kind of, warms my heart. So she's the ninth favorite, but again, she's very popular. And then the 10th, which is kind of sad, is J.R.R. Tolkien. He's number 10th, and of course he wrote all about the hobbits and what I would consider literature. So, but he's number 10. So I think that is really sad. Of course, one of my favorite British authors, obviously, is William Shakespeare, and I think he should be at the top of everyone's list. Okay, let's just get into our fourth survey, we can maybe breeze through this really pretty quickly. But the fourth big question is, what prevents people from reading? And so Abe, let's have you talk about that in our survey here.
Sure.
What gets going? What prevents people from reading? And we know what they're going to say because I hear it from my students all the time. Go ahead.
Yeah, pretty commonly used, not necessarily excuses, but reasons why people don't read more literature. Number one, at 23%, was I don't have enough time.
I knew what that one was before I even read it. Yes.
Yeah. So
that's what my students. I have two literature classes, and I think I've talked about it enough that those who are listeners that follow us. That's the number one question I say. Now, why didn't you read this assignment for class? Well, I didn't have enough time. I said, well, why are you doing here? I mean, that's why you're here. So go ahead.
Yeah, so I don't have enough time, 23%. I don't like reading was a second at 19%. I'm too busy is 18% at number three. I have other hobbies at 15%. And then as you go down, it's talking about more about I do other social activities. I don't like reading literature. Literature is too difficult. Books are too expensive, that sort of thing. So I think with all these, what it basically says is that people are prioritizing other things instead of reading. Right. Or they're just so busy they can't fit in reading a book a little bit every night.
Right.
So I think that points to people are really, really busy and they're not prioritizing reading.
Right. And it's really amazing that – the thing is there are people that do read actively, and the thing is you have to schedule it. If you want to read, you'll read. If you don't want to read, you won't read. But one of the surveys, there's a Gallup survey that came out and say it's really kind of interesting that actually Americans do believe in reading books. And in fact, they say that the internet has not affected their reading. So what they and I don't think we really need to go into any more statistics there, but they really feel that America does still really like to read books and really go after books. Stores like Barnes & Noble, if you look at Amazon.com, I mean, books are still flying off the shelf, probably not as much as they would like. But I do think, though, that I would say that there it may not have stopped reading, but I still think that electronic devices do interfere with really good productive reading. and I don't think you can get as good a reading from an electronic device, if that's your mainstay, than you can by just picking up a book and reading it. So we are getting really pretty close to time, and I wanted to just maybe just encourage you, if you're really interested in this program, go ahead and read that survey. It really is. There's other things that we couldn't get into on this program. But I really wanted to give you some practical tips on how to get into literature and how to start reading it. And I just have maybe four of them, and I think we can get through them pretty quickly. And it just start small. You don't want to jump into some of the big authors. I mean, there's so many good American writers out there, like F. Scott Fitzgerald, Mark Twain. There's John Steinbeck. I mean, Nathaniel Hawthorne, Edgar Allan Poe. There's some great things, some great stories. Now, not everything they write is good, but start small. Also, pick subjects you're interested in from literature. I know Ernest Hemingway. Later in the summer, I wanted to talk about his book on angling, on how to be a good fisherman. I mean, he not only wrote The Old Man and the Sea, he wrote a book on fishing. He loved fishing. So pick subjects you're interested in. There's a lot of good literature out there. In fact, one of the first books on angling was written in the 16th century. and we had to read that in college. It was a great essay. Also, listen to JBL. I mean, we're going to try and pick the best literature for you. And I think we've picked some great literature. And there's some new modern stuff that I think is going to be timeless literature. And one of the books I think is going to be really popular for a long time is Thad Carhart's The Piano Shop on the Left Bank. It's just a wonderful memoir. And then also you can ask and make suggestions to us here at JBL. So we have a lot to do here on JBL. This is going to be a special program. It's going to go a little longer than your normal program. But I would very much like to hear what you have to say about this important issue. So please tell me your thoughts on books and literature. And you can write me your comments to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at jbliterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. The address is facebook.com/justthebestliterature. And remember, you can leave me a comment at Facebook. So you can leave it right there and make it easy for you. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.